The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
Hello, this is Tessa Hadley, and I'm reading Elizabeth Bowen's story, Coming Home, for Mother's Day. All the way home from school, Rosalind's cheeks burnt. She felt something throbbing in her ears. It was sometimes terrible to live so far away. Before her body had turned the first corner, her mind had many times wrenched open their gate, many times rushed up their path through the damp smells of the garden, waving the essay book, and seen darlingest coming to the window. Nothing like this had ever happened before to either her or darlingest. It was the supreme moment that all these years they had been approaching, of which those dim, improbable future years would be spent in retrospect. Rosalind's essay had been read aloud, and everybody had praised it. Everybody had been there. The big girls sitting along the sides of the room had turned and looked at her, raising their eyebrows and smiling. For an infinity of time, the room had held nothing but the rising and falling of Miss Wilfrid's beautiful voice doing the service of Rosalind's brain. When the voice dropped to silence, and the room was once more unbearably crowded, Rosalind had looked at the clock and seen that her essay had taken 4.5 minutes to read. She found that her mouth was dry and her eyes ached from staring at a small fixed spot in the heart of whirling circles, and her knotted hands were damp and trembling. Someone behind her gently poked the small of her back. Everybody in the room was thinking about Rosalind. She felt their admiration and attention lapping up against her in small waves. A long way off, somebody spoke her name repeatedly. She stood up stupidly, and everybody laughed. Miss Wilfrid was trying to pass her back the red exercise book. Rosalind sat down, thinking to herself how dazed she was, dazed with glory. She was beginning already to feel about for words, for darlingest. She had understood some time ago that nothing became real for her until she had had time to live it over again. An actual occurrence was nothing but the blankness of a shock, then the knowledge that something had happened. Afterwards, one could creep back and look into one's mind and find new things in it, clear and solid. It was like waiting outside the hen house till the hen came off the nest and then going in to look for the egg. She would not touch this egg until she was with darlingest. Then they would go and look for it together. Suddenly and vividly, this afternoon would be real for her. "I won't think about it yet," she said, "for fear I'd spoil it." The houses grew scarcer and the roads greener, and Rosalind relaxed a little. She was nearly home. She looked at the syringa bushes by the gate, and it was as if a cold wing had brushed against her. Supposing darlingest were out? She slowed down her running steps to a walk. From here she would be able to call to darlingest. But if she didn't answer, there would still be a tortuous hope. She might be at the back of the house. She decided to pretend it didn't matter one way or the other. She had done this before, and it rather took the wind out of somebody's sails, she felt. She hitched up her essay book under her arm, approached the gate, turned carefully to shut it, and walked slowly up the path, looking carefully down at her feet, not up at all at the drawing-room window. Darlingest would think she was playing a game. Why didn't she hear her tapping on the glass with her thimble? As soon as she entered the hall, she knew that the house was empty. Clocks ticked very loudly. Upstairs and downstairs, the doors were a little open, letting through pale strips of light. Only the kitchen door was shut down the end of the passage, and she could hear Emma moving about behind it. There was a spectral shimmer of light in the white panelling. On the table was a bowl of primroses. Darlingest must have put them there that morning. The hall was chilly. She could not think why the primroses gave her such a feeling of horror. Then she remembered the wreath of primroses and the scent of it lying on the raw new earth of that grave. The pair of grey gloves were gone from the bowl of visiting cards. Darlingest had spent the morning doing those deftly primroses and then taken up her grey gloves and gone out at the end of the afternoon just when she knew her little girl would be coming in, a 4:15. It was unforgivable of Darlingest. She had been a mother for more than 12 years, the mother exclusively of Rosalind, and still, it seemed, she knew no better than to do a thing like that. Other people's mothers had terrible little babies. They ran quickly in and out to go to them, or they had smoky husbands who came in and sat with big feet. There was something distracted about other people's mothers. But Darlingest, so exclusively one's own. Darlingest could never have really believed in her. She could never have really believed that Rosalind would do anything wonderful at school, or she would have been more careful to be in to hear about it. Rosalind flung herself into the drawing room. It was honey-coloured and lovely in the pale spring light. Another little clock was ticking in the corner. There were more bowls of primroses and black-eyed, lowering anemones. The tarnished mirror on the wall distorted and reproved her angry face in its mild mauveness. Tea was spread on the table by the window. Tea for two, that the two might never. Her work and an open book lay on the tumbled cushions of the window seat. All the afternoon she had sat there waiting and working, and now, poor little Darlingest, perhaps she had gone out because she was lonely. People who went out sometimes never came back again. Here she was being angry with Darlingest, and all the time, well, she had drawn on those grey gloves and gone out wandering along the roads, vague and beautiful, because she was lonely. And then? Ask Emma? No, she wouldn't. Fancy having to ask her. Yes, your mother'll be in soon, Miss Rosie. Now run and get your things off. There's a good girl. Oh, no. Intolerable. The whole house was full of the scent and horror of the primroses. Rosalind dropped the exercise book on the floor, looked at it, hesitated, and putting her hands over her mouth, went upstairs, choking back her sobs. She heard the handle of the kitchen door turn. Emma was coming out. Oh, God! Now she was on the floor by Darlingest's bed, with the branches swaying and brushing outside the window, smothering her face in the eiderdown, smelling and tasting the wet satin. Down in the hall she heard Emma call her, mutter something, and slam back into the kitchen. How could she ever have left Darlingest? She might have known, she might have known. The sense of insecurity had been growing on her year by year. A person might be part of you, almost part of your body. And yet once you went away from them, they might utterly cease to be. That sea of horror ebbing and flowing round the edges of the world, whose tides were charted in the newspapers, might sweep out a long wave over them, and they would be gone. There was no security. Safety and happiness were a game that grown-up people played with children to keep them from understanding, possibly to keep themselves from thinking. But they did think. That was what made grown-up people queer. Anything might happen. There was no security. And now, darlingest... This was her dressing table with the long beads straggling over it. The little coloured glass barrels and bottles had bright flames in the centre. In front of the looking glass, filmed faintly over with a cloud of powder, darlingest had put her hat on for the last time. Supposing all that had ever been reflected in it were imprisoned somewhere in the back of a looking glass. The blue hat with the drooping brim was hanging over the corner of a chair. Rosalind had never been kind about that blue hat. She didn't think it was becoming. And darlingest had loved it so. She must have gone out wearing the brown one. Rosalind went over to the wardrobe and stood on tiptoe to look on the top shelf. Yes, the brown hat was gone. She would never see darlingest again in the brown hat coming down the road to meet her and not seeing her because she was thinking about something else. Peau d'Espagne crept faintly from among the folds of the dresses. The blue, the gold, the soft furred edges of the tea gown dripping out of the wardrobe. She heard herself making a high whining noise at the back of her throat like a puppy, felt her swollen face distorted by another paroxysm. I can't bear it. I can't bear it. What have I done? I did love her. I did so awfully love her. Perhaps she was all right when I came in, coming home smiling. Then I stopped loving her. I hated her and was angry. And it happened. She was crossing a road and something happened to her. I was angry and she died. I killed her. I don't know that she's dead. I better get used to believing it. It will hurt less afterwards. Supposing she does come back this time. It's only for a little. I shall never be able to keep her. Now I've found out about this, I shall never be happy. Life's nothing but waiting for awfulness to happen and trying to think about something else. If she could come back just this once, darlingest. Emma came halfway upstairs. Rosalind flattened herself behind the door. Will you begin your tea, Miss Rosie? No. Where's Mother? I didn't hear her go out. I have the kettle boiling. Will I make your tea? No. No. Rosalind slammed the door on the angry mutterings and heard, with a sense of desolation, Emma go downstairs. The silver clock by darlingest's bed ticked. It was 5 o'clock. They had tea at 4:15. Darlingest was never, never late. When they came to tell her about it, men would come, and they would tell Emma, and Emma would come up with a frightened, triumphant face and tell her. She saw the grey-gloved hands spread out in the dust. A sound at the gate. I can't bear it. I can't bear it. Oh, save me, God. Steps on the gravel. Darlingest. She was at the window, pressing her speechless lips together. Darlingest came slowly up the path with the long ends of her veil untied, hanging over her shoulders. A paper parcel was pressed between her arm and her side. She paused, stood smiling down at the daffodils. Then she looked up with a start at the windows as though she heard somebody calling. Rosalind drew back into the room. She heard her mother's footsteps cross the stone floor of the hall, hesitate at the door of the drawing room and come over to the foot of the stairs. The voice was calling, Lindy! Lindy, ducky! She was coming upstairs. Rosalind leaned the weight of her body against the dressing table and dabbed her face with the big powder puff. The powder clung in paste to her wet lashes and in patches over her nose and cheeks. She was not happy. She was not relieved. She felt no particular feeling about darlingest, did not even want to see her. Something had slackened down inside her, leaving her a little sick. Oh, you're there, said darlingest from outside, hearing her movements. Where were... She was standing in the doorway. Nothing had been for the last time, after all. She had come back. One could never explain to her how wrong she had been. She was holding out her arms. Something drew one towards them. "But, my little clown," said Darlingest, wiping off the powder. "But, oh," she scanned the glazed, blurred face. "Tell me why," she said. "You were late." "Yes, it was horrid of me. Did you mind? But that was silly, Rosalind. I can't always be in." "But you're my mother." Darlingest was amused. Little trickles of laughter and gratification ran out of her. "You weren't frightened, silly Billy." Her tone changed to distress. "Oh, Rosalind, don't be cross." "I'm not," said Rosalind coldly. "Then come. I was wanting my tea." "Rosalind, don't be." Rosalind walked past her to the door. She was hurting Darlingest, beautifully hurting her. She would never tell her about that essay. Everybody would be talking about it, and when Darlingest heard and asked her about it, she would say, "Oh, that, I didn't think you'd be interested." That would hurt. She went down into the drawing room, past the primroses. The grey gloves were back on the table. This was the mauve and golden room that Darlingest had come back to from under the shadow of death, expecting to find her little daughter. They would have sat together on the window seat while Rosalind read the essay aloud, leaning their heads closer together as the room grew darker. That was all spoilt. Poor Darlingest. Up there alone in the bedroom, puzzled, hurt, disappointed, taking off her hat. She hadn't known she was going to be hurt like this when she stood out there on the gravel, smiling at the daffodils. The red essay book lay spread open on the carpet. There was the paper bag she had been carrying lying on a table by the door. Macaroons, all squashy from being carried the wrong way, disgorging through a tear in the paper a little trickle of crumbs. The pathos of the forgotten macaroons. The silent pain. Rosalind ran upstairs to the bedroom. Darlingest did not hear her. She had forgotten. She was standing in the middle of the room with her face turned towards the window, looking at something a long way away, smiling and singing to herself and rolling up her veil.
Don't forget to start your free 14-day trial of audible.co.uk and to download your free audiobook. Head to guardian.co.uk/audible.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.